I'm doing this so you don't have to. That's what Bridgette Davis often heard from her mother, Fanny. This was Fanny's business, the numbers. Fanny Davis was a numbers runner in Detroit. This underground lottery business was illegal, but an integral part of the money economy for African Americans, a way to better yourself in a society that persistently shut you out. Bridgette Davis grew up in Detroit in the 60s and 70s and went on to become an award-winning novelist, a screenwriter, and she's a creative writing professor at Baruch College of the City University of New York. Her new memoir is The World According to Fanny Davis, My Mother's Life in the Detroit Numbers. Bridgette Davis is with us now via Skype. Thank you for being with us, Bridgette.
Oh, I'm happy to do so. Thank you.
Before we get into what your mother did and why, I want to give everybody an idea of just who Fanny was. And you so beautifully do this at the start of your book, as you're a first grader at Winter Halter Elementary School in Detroit's Russell Woods neighborhood. And your teacher, a white woman, ignores the homework you're presenting and has to go out of her way to make a pointed comment about your shoes. Tell us what she said and how she said it.
Yes, I still remember Miss Miller so vividly. I was thinking that I was just getting my assignment checked, but in fact, what she said to me was, "You sure do have a lot of shoes." And I didn't know how to answer her. I was nervous because the week before she had asked me, "What does your father do for a living?" And I had said he doesn't work because he was disabled and he didn't. And she said, "Well, what does your mother do?" And I said, "I don't know." That was a lie. I knew she was in the numbers, but I knew already at 6 years old, tell no one that. So when she said to me, "You sure do have a lot of shoes," something made me immediately nervous and anxious. And so she then said to me, "Before you sit down, I want you to name every pair of shoes you have. Go ahead." And it wasn't like there was lightness in her voice. This was no joke. And it felt like a test. So I dutifully named every pair of shoes I could come up with, which ended up being 10 pairs, their styles, their colors. And she said to me, 10 pairs of shoes is an awful lot. Well, I didn't know how to answer her. I just sat back down. And the next day she shocked me by saying, "Come back to my desk." And when I did, she said, "You didn't tell me you had white shoes too." Sure enough, I'd forgotten to mention the white pair. And I apologized. I whispered, "I'm sorry." And she just, again, you know, dismissed me with a flick of the hand. At that point, I thought I was really in trouble, that I had done something really wrong, and I felt I needed to tell my mother, and that evening I did. I told her what happened, and she got so angry so quickly, her eyes just flashed with anger, and she said, "That is none of her damn business. Who does she think she is?" Oh, my goodness. And then she immediately made me get in the car with her, and of course, I thought we were headed back to Winter Halter. I was just terrified. But we weren't. My mom took me to Saks Fifth Avenue. And my mom took me to the shoe department and bought me a brand new pair of beautiful leather, patent leather yellow shoes. And then she said to me, "You are going to wear these shoes to school tomorrow. And you're going to tell that damn teacher of yours that you actually have a dozen pairs of shoes," you know, and I did what I was told.
You did. And Ms. Miller never said another word. That is just an epic clapback. I just have to say, it tells us and also just what it was to be in a school as a 6-year-old child of color in the 1960s. But meantime, your mother is able to give you and your sisters and your brother an unapologetically good life by making yourself one of Detroit's top numbers runners. And what did that entail? Can you give us an idea how this worked?
Yeah, my mom was a numbers runner, which we all have heard in the Black community, that term. And it essentially meant anyone involved in any way in the numbers. But my mom was more specifically both a bookie and a banker. The banker part is extraordinary because for many years, she was the only woman in the city banking the numbers, and then later became one of only two. And what that meant was she literally was the bank. Think of any lottery that you would play. You go play your number. If it actually comes out and you win, someone pays you. And in this case, she was that someone.
And that and she was able over the, what is it, 34 years that she ran?
34 years.
So she gave you a wonderful life, a beautiful home, and was able to really give your family a great life. But it took a toll.
Yes, it did.
Tell us about those tensions and risks, first on her, but also on you.
Well, it's interesting. She faced those risks head on all the time. What she didn't do was make it apparent to us. And I often say she was like a domestic magician because she had such a sleight of hand. Here she was managing this very challenging business and dealing with these twin threats of, first of all, being found out by law enforcement because this underground lottery was actually illegal, right? So there was that risk, but also, you know, the risk of getting robbed. It was important that no one know about this other than that tight knit of people in our family and customers because she didn't want to make herself and us vulnerable. So there was a lot that she was trying to protect us from at the same time that she was determined to succeed at the business to give us a good life.
I'm speaking with author Bridgette Davis about her book, The World According to Fannie Davis, My Mother's Life and the Detroit Numbers. And it's so, we learned so much about the numbers, realizing long before states like Michigan said, hey, we can make money through the lottery, through legalized betting, African Americans were betting on their lucky numbers with this real underground economy dated back, what, to the 1920s?
Yes, the early 1920s is when one man reportedly named Cal Holstein invented the entire elegant system in Harlem. Mm. And that system was what we have to this day. It spread across America largely due to the Great Migration. It was in many cities across the country. Black people created it and ran it and helped to thrive. It was a full underground economy. Which is impressive, you know.
Oh, it is. And your parents were part of that migration. They migrated in the 1950s from Nashville to what they hoped would be a better life with better opportunities in Detroit. So why did Fannie start her own numbers business in 1958?
Fannie had been told, as had thousands of Blacks in the 50s, that Detroit City was the place to be. And they believed it. My father was basically an uneducated worker. And he thought, well, this is going to get a good, solid job in the auto plants in Detroit. But what turned out to be true was that it was very difficult. He couldn't get steady work. Discrimination was rampant. There weren't viable places for Blacks to live. Essentially, my parents found themselves for the first time plunged into poverty. This was not something they had known at all in their hometown of Nashville. And so they were really trying to scramble to figure out how to survive it with three young children. That led my mom to come up with this idea.
And it's very clear from your book, your mother not only kept a very strict moral compass in her dealings with her customers, she also kind of became the heart of the community.
Mom was someone who believed that no matter what you did in life, do it with integrity. She believed that. And that's how she ran her business. And that's why she was successful. People loved that quality in her. They could trust her. And she believed that generosity came with that kind of sort of opportunity to make money and help others. That's what you do with that. You must be generous with it. And so she was a kind of philanthropist. She gave money to all kinds of people in need. And she opened our home as a center for people to come to as a sort of hub where if you were hungry, you could come by Fannie's house. If you were struggling and having problems with your marriage, yeah, come over here and stay a couple nights on the sofa downstairs until things cool off. So I witnessed this. It was her normal. It was really, but they're interlinked. The business she was in, the money she made, and the way she gave back to the community.
Oh, it's so clear. And it is something to see this spelled out in your book. And then Michigan said yes to the lottery. Tell us how that legal lottery business that the state launched, what did that do to your mother's business?
It's so fascinating to learn the history. Michigan finally adopted a state lottery in 1972. They made it legal. But initially, they created was more like a sweepstakes, more like a Mega Millions. You could play once a week. You could not choose your own numbers. So that was not in direct competition with the numbers, with what my mom was doing, because that was a daily game and you could choose your numbers. So for 5 years, the Michigan Lottery was not in competition with my mom's business. People played both.
But then it moved on and then it evolved.
But then, that was something. 1977, the Michigan State Lottery Commission finally got around to what their goal was anyway. And that was to really usurp the numbers game and take that incredible amount of resources and revenue and capture it for the state coffers. And so they invented the daily three, which meant that people could choose their own numbers and they could play every day and they could be paid the next day. And that was direct competition.
I know we follow through with your mother's life and follow you as you write about her death from cancer on May 29th, 1992. Ironically, 9 was her number. Something you write really touched me. And you write, "My mother launched a numbers operation out of necessity. But by contributing to this thriving underground economy, my mother was able to live out Booker T. Washington's dream of Negroes' self-reliance. And as such, she moved through the world as a head held high, race-proud Black woman." And yet it was not until this book that you came out and came clean about what your mother did for a living. Did writing this, has that moved you to be more like your mother with that head held high?
It's fascinating. I always was proud of her. And the reticence about coming clean was not about mixed feelings around who she was and my pride. That was pure and specific and sure. Always. What I grappled with was what others might think. I didn't want them judging her because of their own misunderstanding of who she was and who she was. And it didn't feel worth it to risk people's misunderstanding. I didn't need to tell the story because I was already proud of her. So eventually, my desire to share the story was stronger than my fear about what people would think of her.
It is a wonderful, wonderful story of the world according to Fannie Davis, My Mother's Life and the Detroit Numbers. And Bridgette Davis will be appearing in Detroit 3 dates, tomorrow, Friday the 8th at Page's Bookshop, and then on Saturday at the Detroit Historical Society, and then Sunday at the beautiful main branch of the Detroit Public Library right there on Woodward across from the DIA. And it's a wonderful read, and thank you for sharing it with us on Stateside.
Thank you.